Hello, this is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 22nd of February. The extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle this week have been edited by Lorna Chorley and Michael Turner. And I'm your presenter, Vara Williams. And your readers today are Sheila Nicholson.
Hello.
Brian Woodruff.
Hello.
And Tom Williams.
Hello.
Now, we start with What's On. On Tuesday, February the 26th, from 1 to 2 p.m., there's a lunchtime concert at Winchester Cathedral, given by musicians from Christ's Hospital School, with works by Mozart, Britten, and Dvorak. This is free, with a retiring collection. Also on Tuesday, the 26th of February, the Hampshire Record Office is holding an evening on Family History for Beginners. It is at the Record Office in Sussex Street, Winchester, from 6 to 8 p.m. and costs £10. To book, and it is essential to book, ring 01962 846 154. That's 01962 846 154. On Thursday the 28th of February, the Winchester City Residents Association is holding its AGM and an open meeting to discuss the local development plan, Barton Farm and Silver Hill with speakers. Entry is free and everyone is welcome. For more details, call 01962 852232. That's 01962 852232. On Saturday the 2nd of March, there's a Jane Austen tour and cream tea at Winchester Cathedral at 2:30 p.m. with cathedral guides. Tickets are £10 and can be obtained by ringing 01962 857 275. That's 01962 857 275. And finally, an Alan Ayckbourn play, Joking Apart, is on at Salisbury Playhouse from Wednesday the 27th of February to Saturday the 23rd of March, with matinees on Thursdays and Saturdays. And the box office number for Salisbury Playhouse is 01722 320 333. That's 01722 320 333. Lighting up time ends on Friday the 22nd of February at 7:05 in the morning and begins again at 5:35 in the evening. On Wednesday the 27th of February, it ends at 5:27 in the morning and begins at 5:44 in the evening. And now we come to the Hampshire News. The main headlines this week are traffic wardens to get spy cameras, Chinese New Year is main attraction, and gang in £30,000 gems raid on High Street jeweller. So, can we have the story behind the first headline, please, Sheila?
Traffic wardens to get spy cameras. Bid to crack down on assaults by drivers. Traffic wardens in Winchester are to be equipped with spy cameras so they can film angry motorists who object to being handed parking tickets. The device is so small it can be hidden in an identity badge on a uniform lapel and could be missed without close examination. Wardens are under no obligation to tell drivers they are being recorded. Often the only warning is a small sticker on the badge saying CCTV in operation or recording in progress. Winchester City Council said cameras are needed to protect wardens from assault, but civil liberty campaigners warned the move was a worrying expansion of a Big Brother surveillance state and could be open to abuse. In addition to £500 video badges for each of the council's 13 traffic wardens, the council is set to spend £70,000 on extra CCTV cameras in St Peter's car park off Gordon Road, Chesil multi-storey and the River car park, the River Park Leisure Centre. Wardens, or civil enforcement officers as they are now called, simply slide down a small on-off panel to start filming. Council chiefs say wardens will only switch them on if they believe confrontation with a motorist is likely. The video and audio tape can be used as evidence in court. But Nick Pickles, director of campaign group Big Brother Watch, said this kind of policy treats every member of the public as a suspect, and a small badge is hardly properly notifying someone they are being recorded. The Information Commissioner is very clear that recording should only be used in extreme circumstances, so it is absolutely essential that if conversations are being recorded, this scheme is vigorously overseen and the law enforced to protect the public from overzealous use. Wardens already carry cameras in case motorists dispute the position of a car or parking ticket. A Winchester City Council spokesman denied there was any subterfuge. He said, "It isn't covert, it's for the officer's personal safety if a difficult situation arises. If the camera is switched on, it clearly shows that a recording is in progress." Despite Winchester being a low crime area, a council report said there had been a number of aggressive incidents involving wardens in the last 12 months. Edisix, the software company which makes the video badges, says the devices are classed as CCTV for legal regulation of use. This means motorists have to be informed they are being filmed with signage, but don't also have to be told verbally. Winchester Council has not yet decided which make of video to badge or buy. Liberal Democrat Martin Todd, who represents Winchester St Paul's ward, said, "We have to protect council staff, but we also have to make sure the cameras won't be misused. Local people's privacy must be protected, and we must make sure that any system that is purchased is not open to abuse." But Tory City Councillor David McLean, who represents Bishops Waltham, backed the video badge technology. He said, "If it defends council employees from abuse, it can only be a good thing, and it will allow prosecutions. If people are being abused, it does not matter who they are. They deserve protection from the law."
Chinese New Year is main attraction. That's M-A-N-E. It may be the year of the snake, but it was a lion that was turning heads around Winchester last week. The city marked the most important date in the Chinese calendar with lion dances in the street and celebrations at the university. Festivities got underway with a performance from the Yi Qin Lion Dance Club at the main campus, and later students and staff enjoyed Chinese and Japanese food. A student in a Chinese God of Fortune costume was also present to give out chocolate coins. Shoppers, meanwhile, stopped at the Buttercross to take in the spectacle, organised by Anita Hui, manager of the Tanoshi Fusion restaurant. She and her colleagues were raising money for cancer charity CLIC Sargent at the same time and collected £128. She said, "The children loved it, and we gave out lots of fortune cookies. We were hoping to get lots more businesses involved next year." Chinese New Year, sometimes called Spring Festival or Lunar New Year, begins on the day of the new moon, the first day of the first month of the year, according to the Chinese calendar. It ends on the full moon 15 days later, culminating in a lantern festival. The Chinese New Year in 2013 began on February the 10th and will end on February the 24th. And this is accompanied by a very colourful picture with a lot of Chinese or Japanese, I'm never quite sure which, ladies in their kimonos and a big lion and a flag behind them. And it says underneath, Tanoshi Fusion hosts Chinese New Year celebrations at the Buttercross in Winchester.
Gang in £30,000 gems raid on High Street jeweller. Thousands of pounds worth of jewellery has been stolen in a raid on a Winchester shop. Burglars took Pandora charms and bracelets worth £30,000 from Bellis in the High Street after forcing their way in at around 11 p.m. last Sunday. Police said three men made their escape by running off towards St. Thomas Street. Shop manager Carolyn Sigward said, "Staff are very upset. We think this was planned, as they went straight for Pandora, so someone may have come in and cased the joint while we were open." Staff said the incident was caught on several of the shop's cameras, as the men spent a long time kicking in glass security shutters, but were only in the shop for a few minutes. The shop is a spin-off from Jeremy France Jewellers, also in the High Street, which has been the victim of several robberies in the past. This was the first robbery from Bellis, and co-owner Sarah France said it was heartbreaking. She said, "There are small bits of damage everywhere, and it takes lots of money and effort to correct. That's what's most upsetting. These men were kicking the shutters with no regard for the fact that there were a lot of people around, some even phoning the police while they were doing it. So they must have known they wouldn't have long inside. But the police have been amazing and very efficient." A 44-year-old woman from Southampton has been bailed until April the 5th on suspicion of conspiracy to burgle. Acting Detective Sergeant Ewan Gardner said, "We believe the offenders used two vehicles to leave the scene. Pandora jewellery is distinctive, and I'd like to hear from anyone who may have been offered any Pandora items for sale. Anyone with information should contact the Priority Crime Team at Winchester Police Station on 101 or call Crime Stoppers anonymously on 0800 555 111. I'll repeat that number. 0800 555 111.
That concludes the headlines, and now we continue with death notices. The following deaths have been announced. Benham, Eileen Benham, peacefully in her sleep, aged 99. Curtis, Anthony Curtis, unexpectedly, aged 82. Duke, Pamela Duke. Ginnett, Patricia Ginnett, at Westacre Nursing Home, aged 90. Hamilton, James or Jack Hamilton. Harris, Trevor Harris, after a long-standing illness. McNamara, Sonia McNamara, at Trinity Hospice, aged 73. Moss, Harry Peter Moss, aged 99. And Sambrook, Owen Sambrook, peacefully at home after a long illness. And now we'll have Christian comment, please, from Sheila.
And this week's Christian comment is entitled Lent in a Time of Austerity. For many people this year, there is a barely suppressed groan at the arrival of Lent. Traditionally, 40 days of self-discipline as preparation for Easter and the resurrection of Jesus. Is there not enough penance around already, we are thinking? With cuts to benefits and government-funded programmes, the crisis in unemployment, especially for young people, and rises in food prices, why should we undergo further penance? I was reminded of this challenge when in Bethlehem, the West Bank of Palestine, last year. At the approach of Lent, I was told by a young mother of a young family in the shadows of the Israeli security wall, struggling to make ends meet, that they must fast for 40 days, because the Lord wanted it. I feel equally guilty this year, because I am in the Thar Desert of Rajasthan, India, where this is written, visiting projects for wells for India. Whereas our projects are going very well, with many people having more access to water, the isolated desert people are still barely surviving on a subsistence diet. But wasn't this the same in the time of Jesus. The fisher folk of the Sea of Galilee were the face of grinding poverty and extortion of the Roman occupation of the times. So it was by the shores of Galilee that poor, hungry people flocked to Jesus, landless people who worked long hours in the burning sun for a minimum wage. These were people for whom the norm was being hungry, and no wonder that imagery of bread, crops and water was striking in his teaching. Tragically, in some parts of the world, hunger is still the norm. India has more hungry people than in any other country. Save the Children reported that 5,000 children die every day from malnutrition and that 24% of families have foodless days. Responding to this situation, major charities like Christian Aid, CAFRD and the Tear Fund have now embarked upon a Hungry for Challenge campaign. Conscious that the world food system is failing the poorest people and that the balance of power is tipped towards global companies rather than towards families trying to put food on the table, these charities remind us that we, ordinary people, have the power to change this injustice and to tackle global hunger. Perhaps Lent can be a wake-up call. Far from ignoring suffering at home and the need to work for a juster society in Britain, could awareness of these issues on a global scale awaken our consciousness and change our actions into widening compassion for all human beings? This would indeed make Lent a catalyst for transformation, close to the hopes of Jesus.
And now we have letters to the editor, and the first letter is read by Brian.
And it is from the Reverend Tim Selwood, which says, "We've missed an entire generation. Sir, I read with interest last week's article headed Parishioners Upset Over Church Plans. As an old guy who's been around Winchester for over 60 years and currently a member of the ministry team at St Mary's Kingsworthy, I know I'll soon be gone and most of our ageing congregation with me. Where are our children and grandchildren? We've missed a whole generation. So it's time to wake up. Last week I was with a fantastic bunch of teenagers who represent the future. Most don't do church because it can feel pretty weird and outdated to them. This is why our new bishop, Tim Dakin, is urging churches throughout the diocese to change some of the ways we do things to become more culturally relevant, aware and inclusive. The changes will not threaten the cherished fabric of St Mary's. We just need to ensure we communicate the love of God in the best ways we can. We want those young people and their families to feel welcome, relaxed, and at home in the building, and above all, to enjoy it. We want the church to be there and fully alive after we're dead and gone. So watch this space. There's lots of good news coming from the good old St Mary's and our chapel at Springvale." Crikey, I'm beginning to feel quite young myself. And that's from the Reverend Tim Selwood, St Nicholas Rise, Headbourne Worthy.
Now a letter from Tim Bittleston, headed New Bureaucracy of National Park. "Sir, we have recently taken up matters with Steve Bryan MP to help us in a matter of planning, given that we are in the South Downs National Park. I wonder if any of your other readers have had similar recent experience following our general annexation into this territory. We want to remove a crumbling wall from our garden, and on the advice of our neighbour sought guidance from the local planning authority. Dating from about 1990 and only visible to us and our neighbours, the wall is of breeze block and brick and serves no purpose. The advice from the planning office was that to be safe we file an application. Once this would be a four-page form and a straightforward affair. However, we've had that form back, along with a 19-point plan requiring everything from block plan drawings, impact assessments, archaeological issues and so on. It's a mind-boggling array of requirements, and I'm told it would be the same if we wish to resurface our drive or indeed do any work. These reports require expertise and testimony, pushing the costs of the project to well beyond double. We can't even speak to anybody in planning about it. The local office, always very good in the past, says this is run by a separate group or committee, and there's no route by which to communicate. It feels undemocratic to have new rules imposed by an unelected body, empowered by whom, to impose any rules it likes. It makes settling here an impossible idea. There's no way we want this inconvenience and expense every time we wish to improve our environment. I wonder, has anyone else had similar experience? And that's from Tim Bittleston, Main Road, Abbotsworthy.
And now we have a letter from Mrs. Christine Hartridge, entitled Gay Marriage Bill Was a Free Vote. Sir, Messrs. Dave Chawner and Paul Twelvetree have been rather unfair and hasty to condemn Winchester MP Steve Brine for voting against the Gay Marriage Bill, Hampshire Chronicle, February the 14th. To my knowledge, it was a free vote, and just because Mr. Brine and his wife attended Mr. Chawner's civil partnership ceremony, it does not necessarily follow that he condones gay marriage. Many acknowledge that civil partnerships make good legal sense for gay couples and wish them well, but marriage is a different matter. It will always mean the union of a man and a woman to millions of us, while to Catholics it's a sacrament and not simply a natural extension of a civil ceremony. There was no mention of this legislation in either of the coalition's manifestos, nor was it preceded by a green or white paper. It was seemingly plucked from the ether. George Hollingbury voted for the bill and Steve Brine against, both according to their consciences and beliefs, which surely they are entitled to do within the framework of a democratic society. And that letter was from Mrs. Christine Hartridge, West Street, Hambledon.
Friend's dream fulfilled as folk flock to reopened viaduct. Anne Bristow writes, Sir, how lovely to see so many people last Sunday enjoying the refurbished Hockley Viaduct. Cyclists, walkers, runners, pushchairs, buggies and people with disabilities all enjoying the sunshine. We were able to see glorious views of the water meadows and Winchester through the specially lowered parapet. Luckily, there was parking at the Park and Ride car park, as the nearby lay-bys were very busy. It was unfortunate that one man, with his little children on bikes and a dog, permitted his pet to christen the pristine service. Thank you to the friends of Hockley Viaduct for the years of hard work and forethought. And there's a lovely picture of the viaduct with blue sky around and some people on the viaduct and a signal at go, must be from when it was a real viaduct for trains. And that was from Anne Bristow of Keats Close, Oliver's Battery, Winchester.
And now a letter from John Seeger Green, headed Desecration Doesn't Come as a Surprise. Sir, if one walks the Clarendon Way between Garnier Road and St. Cross, Winchester, one will be able to see the detritus from the latest desecration of a wild area by the Hampshire Wildlife Trust. An area once wilderness-like, where one might encounter deer and woodpeckers, will now become second-rate grazing for cattle. Maybe we should not be surprised, given the conservation of the wild open space of St. Catherine's Hill, which via a process of the gassing of rabbits and insisting that dogs be on leads, has been turned into a grazing area for sheep. But it seems a shame, nonetheless. How much better to have turned the field between St. Cross Mill and St. Cross into genuine functioning water meadows, a project that would have had educational, agricultural, tourist, aesthetic and natural history benefits. And that is from John Seeger Green of Christchurch Road, Winchester.
This letter is from Ray Love and it's entitled Unrepresentative of His Constituents. So our MP, Steve Brine, doesn't believe in equality before the law, having voted against gay marriage. Well, Steve, I'm a Christian, as are gay friends of mine, and we believe God created us the way we are. And if he made me heterosexual and my friend homosexual, then so be it. But it doesn't give people like you the right to discriminate. On This Week, Andrew Neil and Michael Portillo talked about the Neanderthals of the Tory party over the decision made by so many MPs not to support the motion. It seems Steve Brine is, and he doesn't serve the constituents that he represents. And that letter was from Ray Love of Full Flood Winchester.
Karen Barrett writes, little evidence of use of grey matter. Sir, I agree with HCC Cabinet Member Colin Davidovitz when he says that the age of a councillor is unimportant as long as the old grey matter still works. That's in the Chronicle of February the 14th. Unfortunately, there's little evidence of any grey matter at all in the current administration, if its handling of the primary school crisis is anything to go by. One would think that the children driving the need for a new school in Winchester had arrived from outer space. When I was elected in 2007 as City Councillor for St Paul's Ward, it was apparent that Western Primary and other city primary schools were struggling with increasing numbers. My council colleagues and I raised the issue at every opportunity, but the response was that there was sufficient capacity throughout the region as a whole, which was no comfort for the weak parents who were told at one point to send their four-year-olds to South Wanston. The failure of HCC to address the problem sooner has now resulted in temporary classrooms on playing fields and the current single option of a super school being spun as blue sky thinking instead of the panic measure it undoubtedly is. If HCC had listened, the last few years could have been spent looking for better sites and developing an effective strategy. Failure to tackle the problem before the 2010 general election means the complication of making decisions on the context of coalition policy requiring new schools to be free or academies outside the local control. This is presumably the reason for wanting to tack a new primary school onto an existing Westgate Comprehensive. And that's from Karen Barrett, former Winchester City Councillor, Byron Avenue, Winchester.
And this final letter is from Councillor Colin Davidovitz himself. Age is no bar to peak performance. Sir, the reference to me in the Chronicle February the 14th regarding the age profile of the County Council membership, with reference to that, I would just like to say how proud I am to still have my health and strength and be able to be in a position to put my experience very actively at the disposal of the people I serve in my community. Having been a decorated Royal Navy boy sailor, Russian linguist, engineer, manager, and main board director of the National Public Limited Company, and with a lifetime of experience in the broadcasting industry, I'm very lucky to have my four children and seven brilliant grandchildren close to me to keep me in touch with what the people of all generations are having to cope with in these challenging times. This, along with a busy caseload that reflects the range of problems I deal with for my residents, keeps me well and truly in touch and on top of what matters to people most. This is not unlike the experience of colleagues of all ages and political persuasions, whose primary aim is to frame the policies that will guide the excellent work of our council staff, who strive tirelessly to use taxpayers' money prudently in providing the services for which the County Council is responsible, to improve the quality of life of all those who live and work and bring up their families in this wonderful county of Hampshire. And that is from Colin Davidovitz, Executive Member, Communications and Efficiency, Hampshire County Council, The Castle, Winchester.
That ends the letters. If you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by telephoning 01962 860 836. That's 01962 860 836. You can email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk or write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. Now, looking back, we begin with the news from 200 years ago.
200 years ago, 1813. On Friday last, a meeting was held by appointment of the Master General of the Ordnance of Admirals, Graham, Moore and Legge, General Rochford, Colonel Bingham and John Wilson Crocker, Esquire, of the Admiralty, with the officer who has rediscovered the destructive composition known as Greek fire. After an investigation of this dreadful combustible, it was resolved that an experiment on a grand scale be made at Weymouth on the first day of next month. And the second article is, on news that Lord Montfort and Colonel Delap were to fight a duel last Sunday morning on a common between Rumford and Chelmsford, Lavender was dispatched with Perry to take them into custody. About 2 o'clock, Lord Montfort and his second, Sir Gregory Jackson, arrived at the White Horse Inn at Rumford. Lavender informed him he had a warrant against him. Lord Montfort, after some hesitation, acknowledged the charge correct.
Now we come to 100 years ago, that's 1913. In dastardly outrages by militant suffragists, a dozen golf courses were damaged on Saturday. Greens were cut to pieces with trowels, while in others a corrosive fluid was used, destroying the grass. Miss Sylvia Pankhurst, Miss Annie Lansbury and three other women, with Mr. William Lansbury, son of the ex-MP for Bowen Bromley, were charged at the Thames Police Court on Tuesday with window breaking in Bow Road. And the second piece is, on Monday before the Mayor, John Cooper, baker of Old Winton Road, was summoned for a breach of the Bread Act. He pleaded guilty. David Bailey, inspector under the Food and Drugs Act, stated that he saw the defendant in Bridge Street in charge of a cart. The defendant said he was delivering bread, and witness asked him if he had his scales and weights with him. Defendant replied, yes. But then he admitted he didn't have them with him.
And 50 years ago, in 1963, firstly, one of the latest post office television detector cars is on show today outside the Civic Centre, Southampton. All are welcome to inspect it and ask questions. The car will then tour the city, finding those who have unlicensed sets. They're equipped with the latest equipment, which is so accurate that it tells not only in which house the set is in use, but it can pinpoint the room and to which channel it is tuned. And secondly, residents of Gundleton had an alarming experience after their weekly visit to Alsford last Tuesday. The bus, after unloading Byton passengers, proceeded up Shorts Hill, but just before the Crown, it stuck and could go no further on the ice-covered road. The hill is steep and narrow, and the bus began to slide down, but the driver, with great skill, steered it safely backwards and took his patrons home via Alsford.
The next article is 25 years ago, 1988. Astronomical rents have forced another specialist shop to abandon Winchester, even though business is booming. A notice in the window of Pecksniff's Bespoke Perfumery proclaims the demise of Anchor Outlet, unable to cope with cost of prime position in Britain's wealthiest city. Pecksniff's has been opposite the NatWest Bank for just 19 months, enjoying rising profits since its opening in 1986. The rent, however, is increasing at a rate higher than the profits, forcing it to close altogether. And the second article is, now that the day of wine and roses St Valentine's Day has been gone for another year, spare a thought for the wife who told a survey she would have considered it romantic if her husband washed his own rugby kit. That she saw this gesture as a real treat does not say a lot for her marriage. The survey was carried out by Relate, better known in the past as the Marriage Guidance Council.
On to editorial comment, followed by first person.
Yes, the editor this week has two pieces. The first is entitled, Wardens Shouldn't Have to Go in Fear. Traffic wardens, let's face it, aren't exactly top of the list when it comes to the popularity stakes. But like it or not, they have a vital job to do in our traffic-clogged towns and cities, and should be free to go about their duties without hindrance. But increasingly, wardens are faced not only with verbal abuse, but the threat of physical abuse too. That's why it's right, if not a sad indictment on our society, that it is necessary for wardens in Winchester to have spy cameras in the lapels of their uniforms for their own protection. The City Council report said there had been a number of aggressive incidents involving wardens in the last 12 months. While welcoming the move, it's essential that the cameras are switched on only when absolutely necessary and are not misused in any way. And secondly, news that a raft of new businesses has opened in Bishop's Waltham over the past few months is good news for the pretty market town. With many independent traders worried about the effect of the impending Sainsbury's, it appears that small businesses are fighting back, determined to offer shoppers a genuine alternative. Good on them, and we wish them every success.
And now the first person this week is Khalid Aziz, and he says, "Is the Pope a pensioner?" The Pope's resignation, effective from the end of the month, has perhaps got a few more wondering at what stage they should go. We live in suddenly difficult times when it comes to age. We've never lived so long, never worried so much about our health, and, of course, our wealth. The old saw, "Your health is your wealth," has never been more true. But now our thoughts are inevitably linked to how long we can go on. With pension provision, it's hard to say how much is enough. As a country, we are feckless when it comes to pensions, individually feckless in not many adequate contributions from an early enough age. My children look askance when I suggest they should be saving 20% of their income now, and feckless as a nation, with successive governments playing fast and loose with the nation's finances and not funding old age pensions, but in the words of Dickens' Mr. Micawber, waiting for something to turn up. Sadly, jam tomorrow doesn't always appear as those of us in business have always known, and government is only just learning. When it comes to providing for old age, we face much uncertainty. We don't know how long we have to provide for. Our final day is only known to the Almighty. We don't know how long we will continue to enjoy rude health and how much incapacity might cost in terms of care provision. We do know that at today's prices it can be cheaper to check into one of the swankier hotels than a competent care home, with weekly fees in excess of £1,500 and unheard of in the South. Then there's the inflation. It's manageable at around 3%, but those of us edging towards retirement have vivid memories of 1970s Britain, when inflation over the decade averaged 13%, peaking at 25% in 1975. Savings erode significantly in such circumstances, and who knows what the future holds? Listening to Andrew Dilnot's comments on the government's decision to up the cap on care payments by individuals, I was struck by his measured response. Whilst regretting the cap wasn't lower, he pointed out that even with the inflation at current rates, the £75,000 figure won't be that much higher than his commission's recommendation when it comes in 2017. The middle classes will be squeezed with inheritance tax, frozen to pay for even this higher cap. But the key point is that at least some of the uncertainty is removed. Dilnot's hope is that this will lead to more pensioners enjoying their cash rather than hoarding against the unknown exigencies of old age. Trouble is, the cash element is a bit that still eludes us. However, our children know that my wife and I confirmed SRSPOKIs, busy spending our kids' inheritance. That way there'll be less for the damned government to tax. I suppose someone will now accuse me of being immoral.
And we continue with further items of general news. Tom.
Thank you. No pay rise for city council chiefs. Allowances and staff wages set to be frozen. Winchester council chiefs have ruled out awarding themselves a pay increase this year. The cabinet report had recommended a general increase to allow for inflation. But Conservative council leader Keith Wood said allowances should be frozen along with staff wages in the current economic climate. However, petrol expenses are set to go up from 40 pence to 45 pence per mile in line with the mileage rates recommended by the Inland Revenue. Currently, backbench councillors receive a basic allowance of £5,580 per annum. On top of this, cabinet members are paid a special responsibility allowance in the region of £7,000 and the council leader £15,576. This will be the second year running allowances have been frozen and comes after a 5% cut in 2011. Last week, the Cabinet unanimously backed Councillor Wood's proposal, but Councillor Ian Tate said elected members put in an awful lot of work and there were financial consequences. He says allowances were a way of recognising the amount of time and energy councillors put into the role and encouraged people to engage with the system. As previously reported, the £15.4 million draft budget for 2013-14 will see council tax frozen for the second year running. The Band D charge will remain at £126.27. By not increasing council tax, the local authority is able to claim a government grant of £70,000, equivalent to a 1% increase. Council chiefs are finding efficiency savings to help balance the budget after receiving £450,000 cut in central funding. The council is responsible for services including refuse collection, housing, environmental health, planning and parks. Councillor Wood said, "I think it is terrific that we are able to decide that we are not going to increase council tax this year and keep services going. I think that really is quite an achievement. How long we continue to do it is another issue. But for as long as we can make life reasonable for residents, I think we should carry on doing it."
Volunteering Week challenges the stereotypical views about students. Students, eh? They take all the seats on the buses, make loads of noise and leave heaps of litter. Oh, and they just happen to work tirelessly behind the scenes as some of the region's unsung volunteer heroes. And while most of the stereotype negative images of students are exaggerated, the role of many young people working unpaid to help our communities alive goes mostly unrecognised. To coincide with National Student Volunteering Week, it's appropriate they finally step out into the limelight. From dressing up and collecting money for charity as part of Rag Week activities to regular work in the community, students volunteer in a wide range of ways. In fact, a recent study by the National Union of Students showed that 63% take part in formal volunteering during their time at university. And a further study conducted by Student Volunteering England found that students gave 3 million hours volunteering per year, delivered by 42,000 student volunteers who contributed £42 million to the UK economy annually. National Student Volunteering Week was founded as a nationwide celebration of student volunteering, and this year's was the 12th. To mark the occasion, the University of Winchester is holding an exhibition at the Link Gallery of photos which shows students taking part in a wide range of voluntary roles, from helping at charity shops to working with community groups and making films. Charlie Mackey, volunteering placement coordinator at the University of Winchester, says that as well as doing something good for the local community, students benefit in terms of their CVs and employability, confidence, personal development and considering the charitable sector as a career option. "We have examples of students being able to source graduate positions following the volunteering module," she said. She added that volunteering also helps the wider community to have a more positive impression of students. "We've had feedback from elderly people saying that they didn't think students would be interested in helping and that their idea of them was running amok on the streets, but now their perspective has really been changed by the students who volunteered to help them." Around 130 students took part in the volunteering module this year at the University of Winchester, but many more volunteered through other routes, such as the Students' Union. Ross Carter, who is a second-year English student at the University of Winchester, started volunteering around a year ago. Every Thursday, he and another volunteer helped to run the 8th Winchester Scout Group. I want to go into teaching, so I needed to get some experience working with children, he says. We make sure the scouts are happy and safe. It's good because it's building my skills and also networking, but at the same time, if we didn't help out, the group couldn't run, so it's nice to be able to put something back. Lydia Dunford, a third-year law student at the University of Winchester, also volunteers at the Scout group. She works particularly with a boy with autism. I really enjoy volunteering, says the 20-year-old. My brother has autism, so I know that it can be isolating. I want to make sure the Scouts are enjoyable for him. She added, my confidence has grown through volunteering. There's also a lovely sense of helping others. You do have to put an effort in, but it's completely worth it when you see the results. It's just so rewarding. I'd recommend volunteering to anyone. This article is accompanied by a coloured photograph of Ross Carter and Lydia Dunford at the 8th Winchester Scout Group.
Warning shot to MOD over plans. Questions raised over Worthy Down expansion. Highway chiefs have fired a warning shot to the Ministry of Defence over plans for the £270 million redevelopment of Worthy Down Army Base near Winchester. The MOD lodged plans for a new Army, Royal Navy and Royal Air Force College with Winchester City Council last year. Now the County Highways Authority has recommended it be refused unless improvements are made to the travel plan, as traffic in and out of the camp is expected to more than double. The county wants more detail about the proposed improvements to the hourly bus service, including a possible private shuttle to Winchester Railway Station, and consideration of a new off-road cycle route to the city. Meanwhile, South Wanston Parish Council and the City Council's Open Space Officer have also formally objected to the plan. Concerns include lack of community benefits, including cash to improve the recreation ground, land for allotments, and a new off-road cycle route to Winchester. Under the scheme, up to 92 new homes for service families will be built on farmland behind the existing married quarters in Connaught Road. It's proposed to bulldoze most of the buildings inside the camp to make way for new barracks, mess building, classrooms, offices and welfare facilities. The number of students will triple from 479 to 1,350, while permanent staff will increase from 250 to 650. In the application, the MOD said the number of trips to and from Worthy Down is expected to increase from 191 per day to 491. However, it didn't take into account the 91 new service homes. Highway chiefs have asked for revised traffic estimates, number of proposed car parking spaces, firm proposals to improve the bus service, and investigation of an off-road cycle path between Connaught Road and Winchester to avoid traffic on the 60-mile-an-hour Christmas Hill. In a letter of objection to the planning department, South Wanston Parish Chief said the revamping would be an enormous change to Worthy Down, which would improve the whole area, not just the camp. The Parish Council is concerned that there are no proposals to improve the recreation ground in South Wanston, despite its use by service families. They also called for an off-road cycle route from South Wanston to Worthy Down and onto Andover Road, plus land for allotments. Meanwhile, Stuart Dunbar Dempsey, Open Spaces Officer for the City Council, said there was already a shortfall of play space in the parish. The council officer said he would be concerned to see many houses built for service families without improved play facilities at both South Wanston and Worthy Down. Councillors on the City Council's Planning Committee are due to consider the application within the next 2 months.
New homes approved for City Gateway. Former Peugeot garage site will be a landmark building. An £8 million housing development on a key route into Winchester will be a landmark building, the city's housing boss has said. Despite advice from council officers to reject the plans, city councillors approved 14 homes on the former Peugeot garage site in Southgate Street. Addressing a planning committee, Councillor Ian Tate, portfolio holder for New Homes Delivery, said, "What a remarkable and significant site this is. The building at the front will be a landmark building." The 2,700 square metre site comprises several commercial premises, including the Peugeot garage and a furniture store. It also includes a former 19th century coach house, which will be converted into two family homes, while a new four-storey building will provide 9 flats alongside a newly built terrace of 3 four-bedroomed houses. Planning officers argued that the demolition of commercial buildings in favour of new homes would clash with council policy, which holds that the number of employment opportunities on such sites should be retained or increased. But Councillor Barry Lipscombe said, "This site cries out for development. It's one of the main arteries into the city, the gateway. We need to be prepared to move away from our policies on occasions when we need to. And I think this is one of those occasions." Councillor Michael Reid agreed. "With regard to the loss of employment, it is minimal. The amount of staff they kept was probably no more than 20 or 25 at its peak," he said. Councillor Therese Evans backed the plans, but was unhappy at the lack of affordable housing, although officers said developers were under no obligation because the plans for just 14 homes did not meet the number required to trigger the affordable homes requirement. Councillor Evans also expressed sympathy for nearby homeowners. She said, "I do feel sorry for the occupants of Southgate Villas, but there's nothing to say that a commercial development wouldn't result in some loss of light. Inevitably, if you live in a city and there's a big space behind you, it's going to be developed eventually, although that's no comfort to the occupants, I know." The meeting also heard that there had been inquiries about the site from businesses, including one from McDonald's and one from a convenience store, although they were held to be no more than tentative expressions of interest. Developer Bargate Homes can now press ahead after councillors voted unanimously in favour. Only Councillor Lipscombe abstained on the grounds that he could not throw the occupants of the neighbouring properties to the wolves just because we think it's a commendable design. Work is likely to start in the summer, with the first homes ready by late 2014. And this is accompanied by an artist's impression of the new homes in Southgate Street, looking towards Winchester High Street, which, as all artist impressions are, looks very attractive.
Next article is entitled "Goalball Comes to Winchester." A Paralympian has launched a new sports club for Winchester's blind and partially sighted. Adam Knott, who played goalball for Team GB with his brother David at the London Games, was at Peter Simmons College for the first training session of Winchester Goalball Club last Saturday. Adam, 18, of Chandler's Ford, who studies at the college, said, "I wanted to set up the club as part of the legacy of the Games. We want to make sure people can have this opportunity to play in competitions. It's a club for anyone with a visual impairment, and I hope people will enjoy goalball as much as we do." Goalball is played on a volleyball-sized court with 3-man teams trying to score against each other in a football-style net. But the ball has bells in it, as the players are all blindfolded. The club was set up thanks to help from Winchester's Rotary Club and Sainsbury's Winchester, after the latter allowed the Rotarians to raise cash for the club by selling raffle tickets at its store. Rotary President Simon Theobalds presented Adam with a cheque for £1,000 towards club funds, while Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Frank Pearson, did the official opening honours. Rotarian David Farthing, who also helped set up the club, said, "We hope this money will help you continue to train in Winchester and realise your ultimate goal of getting into the Rio Olympics 2016. An open training session was held from 10 a.m. till 11 a.m. with 3 prospective members turning up, but the brothers urge anyone interested to go along to the next open session at the college at the same time on Saturday, March the 2nd. Adam and David, 15, are still active members of the UK goalball team and hope to compete at the Sports Youth Championships in Colorado, USA in July. And this article is accompanied by three coloured photographs, one depicting the dignitaries at the opening ceremony, and two with of action photographs, one of Dermond Weir making a save, and the other one was David Knott in action.
Raft of new shops revitalised town. Unique character is a big draw for customers. Bishop's Waltham is thriving after seeing several new shops open their doors in the past year. The positive news comes in the wake of a threatened triple dip procession and the impending opening of a Sainsbury's superstore on the edge of the town. However, Parish Councillor Barry Nicholson said there was a real buzz about the town. Part of it is down to the feeling that the town has a unique character in terms of its town centre. We have a wide range of shops, to such a degree that if a shop becomes available, there's a queue because independent traders want to trade here and the rates are reasonable, he said. Kevin Duncan and his wife Emma opened Toy Box in the town last October. Mr. Duncan said certain shops suit certain areas. It's very traditional as a town, and we thought a wooden toy shop would be a good fit. Steve Miller, chairman of the town's Chamber of Trade, said, I think there's a general feeling that the people who want to survive will have to deliver a high service, which they're doing at the moment. Chris Greenfield, proprietor of Durley Framing, moved into his premises on the High Street last June. I'm actually now looking for a bigger site, he said. It seemed the right sort of area, but I had no idea it would be this busy. I was hoping to do it part-time initially. There's a strong local feeling in Bishop's Waltham, and I think some people feel threatened by Sainsbury's. People don't want to be taken over by the Nationals. I'm quite neutral about it, though, and I think it would probably increase my business rather than do any damage to it. Barbara Nicholson and Susan Short opened boutique clothes shop Cassis 6 months ago. Barbara said, I think Sainsbury's is going to be a good thing. Most women I know from the town tend to drive to Hedge End, Winchester or Fareham to use the big stores there. I think it will bring more people from the outskirts into Bishop's Waltham. It'll make us independent traders up our game. Craig Matthews, who owns sports shop Chocolate Flip Flop, which opened in September, said, it's a very well populated village retail-wise. There are not many empty units and not many sites come up. I'm not as concerned about Sainsbury's as I would be if it was the butcher or the veg shop, but it will be undoubtedly affect them more than it would me. Sharon Beavis, who took over the Barrington's Delicatessen 10 months ago, said she felt it was a good place to do business, having shopped in the town for the past decade. It's such a lovely street, it's almost like coming back in time. Most of the shops are independent and people can have a bit of social interaction rather than just pushing a trolley around a huge supermarket, she said. The town failed last year to secure a £100,000 Mary Porter's High Street grant, but the parish then successfully applied for a one-off £10,000 grant, which has been earmarked for a town centre manager. And there's a picture of a load of these traders, which I won't go into in detail, who's smiling and saying they're happy doing business in Bishop's Waltham.
Lillian makes it 106. One of Hampshire's oldest residents celebrates her 106th birthday this week. Lillian Jeffrey of the Colton Care Home in Abbots Barton will spend her special day with families, friends and fellow residents. Of the secret to a long and happy life, Mrs. Jeffrey said, be good, but also have fun. And remember, he who never made a mistake, never made anything. Home activity organiser Janet Orchard said Mrs. Jeffrey had always been fashion conscious, and keen to wear her pearls, brooch and perfume every day. Janet said she always told us that she likes to dress up every day as if she was going to meet the Queen. Mrs. Jeffreys, whose photograph with a picture of the Queen in a telemessage accompanies the article, has enjoyed drama, reading and dancing, and was an accomplished pianist, continuing to play the piano until after she reached 100. Born in 1907, she had four brothers and three sisters, and her first job was to keep the accounts for her father's metal polishing and plating business. She went on to hold a senior post at the Austin Motor Company until she married in 1941. She also spent a considerable time fundraising for the NSPCC. Mrs. Jeffrey moved to Winchester in 1986 to be near her family and two granddaughters. Remarkably, she's not the oldest person at Abbots Barton. That honour goes to a fellow resident, Blanche Rogers, who is 108.
PM agrees to regularise hospice funding. The boss of a children's hospice has expressed a delight at support from the Prime Minister for improved funding. Professor Khalid Aziz, chairman of Naomi House, met the PM last Wednesday to discuss fairer funding for children's hospices across the UK. Currently, children's hospices do not get the same treatment as those for adults. Mr. Cameron said, "I totally get this. I will write to the Healthcare Commission and suggest they take this model up immediately. I see no reason to delay." Professor Aziz said, "We couldn't have asked for more. For well over 10 years, we have been asking visiting MPs who've come to Naomi House and Jack's Place to help us with this." They all try to help, but John Glenn, Salisbury MP, successfully asked the question of the PM a month ago, and thankfully David Cameron said yes. We are very pleased indeed. The primary care trusts in Wiltshire and Dorset have had an arrangement with us for a couple of years now, where we get paid a certain amount of money for every young person we take from their particular area. What we really want is for that to be rolled out across all PCTs. This really ought to be regularised after all. Children are every bit as important as adults. The meeting took place in the House of Commons, following the Prime Minister's weekly session in PMQs. Steve Brine, MP for Winchester and Chandler's Ford, said the Prime Minister has said many times he wants to put in place a per-patient funding system that would be for all hospices. This meeting was all about telling him such a system exists and is, in part at least, working for Naomi House right now. Our aim was to get that across and encourage David Cameron to cut and paste this simple formula via the new National Commissioning Board across England, so we can finally resolve children's hospice funding in a reasonable and sustainable way. Naomi House currently received less than 10% of the £7 million needed to run the hospice annually from the public purse. The average public income received by adult hospices equates to 38%.
Nurse made 285 overseas calls while on duty. A nurse has been struck off for making 285 phone calls to South Africa when she should have been caring for elderly residents with dementia. Nomkhondisa Adelaide Jassini was found to have neglected her duties at Westacre Nursing Home in Sleepers Hill, Winchester, putting residents at risk by making hundreds of personal calls overseas when she should have been on duty, racking up on an 885 mobile phone bill in 2 months. The Nursing and Midwifery Council, NMC, was told that an investigation was launched after bosses received bills for £385 and £500 for one of the phones the nurses used while on duty. Mrs. Jassini was one of the two nurses who had access to the phone and, when confronted, quickly admitted making all but nine of the calls. She's also found to have failed to complete the controlled drug register on three occasions. She was suspended and later dismissed for gross misconduct. At the NMC hearing, the panel heard that Mrs. Jassini conceded what she has done was very stupid. It noted she did not ask permission to make the calls or make any attempt to pay for them, and that given the timing, she would have been making many of them while on duty. Finding that both charges had been proved, the panel decided to issue a striking off order that would see her name taken off the nursing register. Their report said, "The panel found that the frequent personal calls made by Mrs. Jassini during work hours meant she was neglecting patient care and that residents of the care home were exposed to risk as a result of her neglecting her duties. Mrs. Jassini's actions fell seriously short of the standards expected of a registered nurse and were sufficiently serious that they can be described as misconduct. There was also no evidence of Mrs. Jassini showing any insight or remediation in her actions, leaving the panel to believe that there remains a risk of repetition in her dishonesty. Westacre Nursing Home didn't want to comment on this case.
Family and neighbours flee as fire destroys roof. A family fled to safety and an entire street was evacuated as fierce flames ripped through a home near Winchester. The blaze destroyed the roof of a home in Willow Green, Colden Common, although the family of four that lived there were able to escape to safety. Gareth and Sarah Compton, both 28, were still in shock on Saturday and declined to speak to the Hampshire Chronicle. But Sarah's father, Barry Aylmer, of Hazel Close, Colden Common, said the pair had gone to a hotel with sons Owen, 6, and Harrison, 3, paid for by their housing association A2 Dominion. Mr. Aylmer said, "They are in shock, and so are the boys. The eldest just wanted to go back home, but the housing association has put them in a hotel for a week, and who knows after that. They're all doing well, being looked after by friends and family. It's a shame, but it could have been worse. The locals have been fantastic, and we've been inundated with offers of help, even from the Red Cross, who said they could provide clothes." He said the fire brigade were great. They did a fantastic job and helped save a lot of stuff. What a great bunch of guys. According to the Hampshire Fire and Rescue Service, the family were talked through the ordeal by a 999 operator who reassured them during the blaze and made sure they all got out safely. It was one of four terraced houses and all the residents had to get out in case the fire spread. One resident, Jody Wells, a 35-year-old builder, said it was a horrible experience. He said, "We got a knock on our door around 10:30 p.m. and I heard people shouting, 'Fire, fire!' It was very scary, especially for the children. The firefighters told us it could have been an electrical fault, so I think we're all worried about our houses now." Neighbour Leroy Oosthuizen, 27, who works in traffic management, added, "We have smoke damage in our home, now in our loft, so if it rains, then that water will come right through, and I have a 14-month-old baby, so I'm very worried." The neighbours said that they had been advised by their housing association, A2 Dominion, to leave their houses temporarily while a surveyor assessed the properties. Appliances from Winchester, Eastleigh, Redbridge and St Mary's attended and battled the blaze for 4 hours. 26 firefighters used an aerial ladder platform, 8 breathing apparatus and 3 jets. Watch manager Mark Compton of Eastleigh Fire Station said, Watch manager Mark Compton of Eastleigh Fire Station, first on the scene, said, "It is still under investigation, but it looks like the fire was caused by a possible electrical fault. It was difficult to deal with because it was already a developed fire when we arrived, but luckily everyone got out safely in time."
Passengers can travel smarter with card. Stagecoach passengers will get a boost from a new Smarter Travel Card following the launch of an innovative smart card ticketing scheme in the region. The scheme, which is now live on more than 265 stagecoach buses across Hampshire, allows passengers to store their travel card on an electric card called Stagecoach Smart instead of using paper tickets. It also offers customers the chance to pay for their travel through hassle-free automatic payments after registering online. Andrew Dyer, Managing Director of Stagecoach South, said, "We believe the launch of Stagecoach Smart will encourage even more people to try our greener, smarter bus service, and the scheme will rocket in popularity. As more passengers use the smart card, we will see less boarding time at the bus stops and the journey is prepaid." And this is accompanied by a small colour photograph of Andrew Dyer, the managing director, with his colleague Tom Bridge, and they're dressed as spacemen carrying images of rockets, presumably because the scheme's going to rocket in popularity.
Drivers face months of M27 works. Motorists are facing months of lane closures and speed restrictions on one of Hampshire's busiest motorways. The work, which began on Monday, will start on a £5 million scheme to upgrade a bridge on the M27. Set to take 7 months, the work will take place on the bridge at Junction 9 at Park Gate and will include installing a new concrete central reservation barrier. This comes as plans have been revealed to completely shut part of the motorway further west for separate work. Steve Cobb, Highways Agency Structures Manager, said the work at Park Gate was needed because the existing bridge supports and joints have come to the end of their life. They're replacing the central reservation at the same time to minimise disruption. Workers will resurface sections of the lane, of Lane 3, and the hard shoulder, which will involve overnight lane closures and expected to be completed by mid-March. Then narrow lanes and a temporary 50-mile-an-hour speed limit will be installed. Meanwhile, work will be carried out next month on the eastbound carriageway of the M27 between junctions 4 and 5 to prevent a build-up of surface water on the motorway when it rains.
Mum calls for safety measures after son hurt by gate. A mother of a 5-year-old taken to hospital on Monday with head injuries has praised two boys at a playground who saved the day. Katya Holloway of Grange Close, Winchester, is now calling for safety measures after her son Morgan's forehead split completely open after a metal gate at Otterbourne Recreation Park swung back in his face. It happened when he ran out of the playground gate, which he pushed open, and it swung straight back into his face, she said. I think it's crazy if a gate can be pushed back with such force by a small child that it smashes their face open. Mrs. Holloway also had her 7-year-old and a 10-month-old son with her. Morgan was rushed to hospital after two other youngsters, believed to be about 11 years old, called an ambulance. There were no other adults, and these boys saved the day. They used their phone to call 999 for me, then one stayed with me and helped with the baby and calls to emergency services, while the other went and waited at the road to direct the ambulance. I never got a chance to ask their names, but I'd really like to thank them properly, Mrs. Holloway said. She said a similar incident occurred several years ago with her elder son at River Park Playground, and is now calling for the gates to be fitted with safety mechanisms. A spokesman for Otterbourne Parish Council said it had been contacted by Mrs. Holloway, and in a statement said, "The Parish Council is most concerned about what has happened and would not want to see harm caused to any child." And that article's got two photographs, one of Morgan displaying his head injury and the other of the whole family standing by the gate in question.
The next article is entitled "Conservationists in a Rush to Clean Up River." Green-fingered villagers helped tidy up riverbanks near Winchester last week. Members of the Worthies Conservation Group were at St Swithin's Church in Hedburn Worthy last Saturday to do river restoration work around the grounds. 14 volunteers cleared away overhanging branches and dead wood and planted 50 metres worth of faggots to enable planting in May. Bruce Graham, who runs the group, said, "This is a small-scale project, but it still promotes education and benefits people who like to walk through here. We also want people to visit the church and see for themselves what a great natural haven this is, with its wildlife and flora." Mr. Graham of Gillingham Close, Kingsworthy, added, "The group wants to put up an information board, but that it would cost hundreds of pounds. The group has been going since 2004 and currently has around 12 members, but Mr. Graham said it would welcome any new volunteers, particularly younger members in their 30s or 40s. Anyone interested in joining or making a donation to the group should contact Mr. Graham on worthiesconservationvolunteers.org.uk." And this is accompanied by a coloured photograph of all the volunteers standing in front of St. Swithin's Church, with the water in the foreground, and they all look quite happy with the hard day's work that they've just performed.
Boy of 8 hurt in a hit and run. Police are appealing for witnesses after an 8-year-old boy was injured in a hit and run near Alsford last weekend. The boy was cycling east on the Winton Rise at 4 marks between 3 p.m. and 3:15 on Sunday near the junction with Blenheim Close, when an unknown vehicle struck his pedal bike. The boy fell onto the grass verge at the side of the road and suffered severe bruising. He was taken to hospital, where he was kept in for observation. PC Chris O'Connor said, "The victim, who was left injured and alone by the side of the road, has been extremely shaken by this incident. He was helped by passing motorists and local residents. I would urge anyone with any information about this incident, or anyone who think they may know who the driver of the vehicle is, to contact the police at earliest opportunity. Anyone with information should contact PC O'Connor at Fratton Roads Policing Unit on 101 or call Crime Stoppers anonymously on 0800 555 111.
Invasion of rhinos at Marwell. The charge is rapidly gathering pace as a herd of rhino sculptures invaded Winchester ready for their makeovers. A total of 57 mini rhinos flocked to Marwell Wildlife as the Go Rhinos education programme enters its next creative stage with schools and community groups across five counties. Each of the rhinos has been sponsored by a school that will now be able to pick up their sculpture and take it back to class to be decorated, ready to take its place in a public art extravaganza which goes live in Southampton this July. The mini rhinos will form an indoor trail, while the life-size sculptures sponsored by businesses will graze the streets of the city during a 10-week exhibition. There's still time for businesses to get involved by paying between £3,500 and £4,000 for a sculpture, which they can then choose to decorate with one of a variety of designs by local artists. Some of the proceeds from an auction of the sculptures will go towards Marwell Wildlife's work with rhino conservation. Money will also go towards other park conservation projects, such as the Rose Road Association and Wessex Heartbeat High Five Appeal. And that is accompanied by an article of children from Bishop's Waltham Infant School welcoming some of the 57 rhinos to Marwell.
Watercress recipes. Watercress farmers are launching a national competition to search for the greatest watercress dish of the nation. The winner, who will win £2,000, will be announced at the Alsford Watercress Festival on May the 19th. Judges will be putting three finalists through their paces on the day, and the winner will be given the chance to cook their recipe live at the festival. All three finalists will enjoy an expenses-paid weekend in Alsford, the capital of watercress. To enter, upload your recipe to www.watercress.co.uk. That's www.watercress.co.uk or email info@watercress.co.uk. That's info@watercress.co.uk. Other events at the 9th Annual Festival include the World Watercress Eating Championships, in which competitors try to eat two bags of watercress in the quickest time and beat the Guinness World Record of just 46.69 seconds.
Theo Tweet is a big boost. A Winchester business has been boosted by a former BBC dragon. Audio-visual company Soundbite Productions saw a huge increase in web traffic and Twitter followers after business mogul Theo Paphaitis, who starred in BBC Two's Dragon's Den, retweeted a message from Soundbite boss Stephen Lucas. It was part of Mr. Paphaitis' weekly Small Business Sunday event, where he encourages businesses to contact him and retweets six messages to his 326,000 followers. Mr. Lucas said, "We are a small business, I still work from home, but with the power of the internet and help from an entrepreneur like Theo, it's enabling me to make a big impact." And there's a very smiley photograph of Theo to accompany that.
There are two local items from Sutton, Scotney, South Wanstead and Micheldever. The first, a new community choir is hoping to hit the right note in Sutton, Scotney. Music teacher Lisa Fay, who also helped direct the successful pantomime Dick Whittington, is setting up the choir. Locals are invited for a one-hour taster session on Wednesday, February the 27th in Victoria Hall, starting at 7:45 p.m. Lisa, who was asked to start the choir following the success of the panto, said, "It will be fun music for all, no audition necessary. Anyone interested can contact Lisa on 07789 681 833. I'll repeat that. It's 07789 681 833. The second item is wind turbines will be the topic of conversation on a fundraising walk from Mitchell River Station to Wanston. Sue Bell organises long country walks on the first Sunday of every month to raise funds for Warren Hall. The next walk, on Sunday, March the 3rd, will pass through rolling chalk downland at Bullington Cross, site of a controversial planned wind farm. Farmer Douglas Patterson, who is leading the battle against the giant turbines, will join walkers to point out local landscape features of interest. Mrs. Bell said they'd walked the route for the past 5 years. "We don't set out to be political, but if we find something of interest, then I'd like to engage in discussion. Walkers will meet at Warren Hall car park at 10:30 a.m.
Butchers and producers urged to enter food competition. Butchers and producers across the country are being encouraged to enter a competition to find Hampshire's best sausages, pies and ready meals. The Great Hampshire Sausage Pie and Ready Meal Competition will return in April and is run by the county's food group Hampshire Fair. It provides an opportunity for local butchers to put their very finest products in front of a panel of expert judges. Producers can enter products in a wide range of categories, including traditional pork sausage, meatballs, faggots and black pudding. The keenly contested event was last held in 2010 and attracted 200 individual entries from 30 Hampshire butchers and meat farmers. Awards and a trophy are presented in each category, and the supreme champion of 2013 will be selected from across all the entries. This year's event will be held at the Holiday Inn in Winchester on Tuesday, April the 9th. Mike Wright, chairman of Hampshire Fair, said, "Since it was introduced in 2001, this competition has always been extremely popular amongst our county's butchers, each determined to prove that their products are the best."
Simmons students, Oxbridge bound. 53 Peter Simmons students from 29 different secondary schools have been accepted for places at Oxford and Cambridge universities this September. The figure is one of the highest in the UK for state schools. The college puts their success down to hard work by both current and former students, presently at Oxford or Cambridge, who act as applicants' mentors, as well as support given by the college's governors, who conduct practice interviews for those applying. Kalpana Shenoy, teacher in charge of the Oxbridge entries, works closely with ELS Tunnard, her counterpart in careers and personal tutors, to help students focus on making impressive applications by encouraging wider reading, open day attendance and participation in summer schools. Principal Neil Hopkins said, "I'm very proud of the disproportionately high number of students from Simmons who receive offers from Oxbridge. There are very few schools or colleges of any kind anywhere in the UK, state or independent, who can match this figure. It's a testament to the talent and hard work both of the students and also of their teachers and advisors." 8 of the students studied at King's, three at Beaufort and 1 at Perrins, 3 at the Westgate, 2 at Stanmore, 4 at Thorndon, 3 at Wildon and 3 at Wyvern. Among the students who have received conditional 2013, and I'm afraid that peters out, something seems to have been missed out, but there's a lovely photograph of a load of these students who are going to Oxbridge, all looking very happy, and I don't blame them.
Moving to a different educational institution, students at Wyvern College. The heading is "Wyvern students are an inspiration." Students at Wyvern College have hit their target for fundraising for 2 fellow pupils suffering from cystic fibrosis. After 3 years of fundraising, £7,000 has been raised for twins Hayley and Jess Tyrrell, who left the Fair Oaks School last July. The funds will go towards a medical respiratory vest to help their daily routine of physiotherapy and make their lives more comfortable. Friends of the twins set up a sponsored bike ride to Oxford and back. A fun run at the college raised £700, while chocolate, raffles, a Christmas disco and sweet and cake sales were also organised. Hazel Richardson won the college's St Thomas Charity Cup, making her support of sufferers of cystic fibrosis her legacy. When she retired, teacher Jenny Firth then took up the cause, with her Year 8 group raising £1,500. Finally, after 3 years of fundraising, £7,000 has been raised. A cheque was presented to the Tyrrell twins at a recent assembly that included Mrs. Richardson, who was delighted to see all the years of hard work and fundraising had been successful. Head teacher Alan Newton said, "The dedication of these students is an inspiration, and I'm very proud of the commitment and perseverance they've shown in order to help other youngsters live a more normal, integrated life."
Pop in for some energy-saving tips. Energy-saving drop-in sessions are launching in Winchester this weekend. The Green Deal Winchester pop-up shop in the Brooks Centre is offering advice on saving money and energy at home. Free sessions will run from 11 a.m. until 2 p.m. on Saturdays and Sundays, from this Sunday, February the 24th, until Saturday, March the 23rd. Experts will give talks at each event on topics such as better heating, lighting, energy monitoring and solar power. Green Deal Winchester is a partnership between the City Council and Winchester Action on Climate Change, or WINACC, and is government funded. WINACC Director Chris Holloway said, "Come and find out how you can save energy, save money and stay warm. It's all free, there's no pressure and no commitment. We aren't selling anything."
James Best Gastropub Chef. Long Parish chef James Durrant of the Plough Inn has been chosen as the UK's leading gastropub chef in the Budweiser Budvar Top 50 Gastropubs Award. A panel of judges, including leading pub guide editors and food writers, voted for Mr. Durrant to take the award. Ms. Rob Wilcock, editor of the Morning Advertiser, the trade paper for publicans, said James is an outstanding chef and richly deserves to be voted the best in the UK. His food is the highest standard and a major reason why the Plough Inn is so popular. Mr. Durrant, pictured second from the right with colleagues, has been the chef proprietor at the Plough Inn since March last year. His signature dish is beer-battered fish with triple-cooked chips, mushy peas and tartar sauce. Mm. There's a picture of five people there looking very happy and showing something which could be anything but looks like meat and chips.
Viaduct parking restricted. Winchester Civic Chiefs have agreed to restrict parking at the Hockley Viaduct near Winchester. The measure was prompted by car-sharing commuters who park all day and deprive other drivers of a space, or people wanting to visit the viaduct or riverside walk along the Itching, a council report said. A four-hour waiting period with no return for 8 hours from Monday to Saturday 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. will now come into force to stop the commuter use.
And that concludes the extracts for this week. Thank you to our editors, Lorna Chorley and Michael Turner, and thank you to our copying and dispatch and tape preparation teams. And thanks to our readers, Sheila Nicholson.
Bye.
Brian Woodruff.
Goodbye.
And Tom Williams.
Goodbye.
And from me, Vara Williams. Goodbye, and do have a good week. Please post your memory sticks back as soon as possible in the yellow wallet. And when you put your label inside, please make sure that the cord attached to the memory stick is fully inside the wallet as well. Thank you.